Welcome to Voices of the Body, a podcast where we explore the intricate connection between mind, body, and spirit as we dive into the world of healing, advocacy, alchemy, and purpose. Our bodies are vessels of wisdom, carrying stories of our experiences, our joys, and our sorrows. Together, we'll uncover the power within ourselves and our communities to heal, to advocate, to transform, and to live with and on purpose. Join us on this journey of self-discovery and empowerment. Let's unlock the voices of our bodies. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Voices of the Body, the podcast. My name is Love Ashley Elaine, and I am here to be your guide as we journey through healing our mind, our body, and our soul, and connecting with the voice of our body. This episode, we are tapping into a really interesting topic, really dope conversation all around money trauma, healing our money trauma, and what that looks like somatically. Y'all have heard the word somatic healing before. I should probably do an episode on just somatic healing and what exactly that is. But money trauma and what that looks like healing in the body, our responses, our triggers, emotionally, how we feel about money, when we have it, when we don't have it, our behaviors around money. Does it go too fast? Does it move too slow? All of the things, right? I thought this was also appropriate for to be a part of this conversation for Domestic Violence Awareness Month because of financial abuse and what that looks like. We didn't dive into that too much, but there is conversation surrounding where money traumas come from, which come from sometimes abusive situations, and trauma. So prepare your mind, body, and soul as we get into this episode. Hello, my divine, beautiful souls. My name is Love Ashley Lane, and I'm the owner of not just this podcast, but a business named AEI Studios. If you're a high-achieving woman who's feeling disconnected from your true self, seeking healing or needing clarity and direction, I have something so special for you. Join us for an exclusive one-day retreat called Faith and Vision on December 7th. This is a very transformative experience that is designed to help you restore your vision, connect to your intuition, and realign you with your soul's purpose. So just imagine spending a whole day in a supportive environment with like-minded women, engaging in some vision coaching. We're going to share some really practical tools on just creating that internal vision board, right? We're not going to do the cutting out of pictures and all of that. We want to get real practical with how we create our life's purpose or how we step into it, how we really create the life that we keep seeing flash in our mind, right? We're going to do some restorative and yin yoga, some guided meditations, and really connect with other like-minded women. The goal here is to really restore your vision, restore your connection to your intuition, and just invite in some beautiful holistic healing, some beautiful community, and some really good, juicy information on Really tapping into your vision. What does that look like? What is your vision for your life? What is your vision for your soul business? Whether you're navigating life challenges, seeking some holistic healing, or deepening your spiritual practices, faith and vision is the perfect space for you. I will say spaces are limited, so to ensure that you are a part of this intimate and very personalized experience, make sure you drop into the show notes, click on that link, and go ahead and register today. We are requiring some questions that need to be answered and a Zoom call with me one-on-one just to make sure that we're a great fit. Okay. I don't want anybody there that's not ready or feels intimidated, or, we want to make sure that the room is filled with really good people, really like-minded people, and people, women. Yes, that are moving in the same direction, on the same path, and ready to do the work. There are only 10 spots, so I would jump on this quickly. If this resonates with you, like I said, go into the show notes, complete the questionnaire on the next page, and schedule your chat with me. I cannot wait to share this transformative journey with you. I will see you on December 7th. And welcome back to Voices of the Body. I'm thinking about a name change. We'll see here. There's so much rebranding happening, so be prepared. Let me introduce my first guest for season four. Today we have Miss Nadine Zumont. She is a money coach and the host of the podcast Unfuck Your Money Show. It's really good, y'all. With a very unique approach that blends personal finance, accounting, behavioral finance, somatic healing, archetypal work, and trauma healing. Her holistic, trauma-informed, no blame, no shame philosophy offers a very refreshing perspective that is very needed in today's world. Nadine empowers healers to achieve financial stability and sustainable wealth while serving their communities through heart and soul aligned businesses. She believes in our duty as healers is to nurture, is to for us to nurture a healthy relationship with money. With over 100 clients and firsthand experience, Nadine has seen how messy money relationships can hinder long-term success, so true, leading to self-doubt, debt, and burnout. She focuses on building a secure and empowering relationship with money through emotional healing, which she believes is the foundation of wealth. Originally from Amman, Jordan, Nadine has lived in Australia, France, and the US. She now resides in Albuquerque, New Mexico, with her partner Tommy and their fur baby Arby. Let's give a
Arby.
nice let's give a nice soul welcome to Nadine.
Hello. I love when you're reading that. I'm like, that's me. It's true. It's all true. It's
I
like,
love reading people's bios because it's like you sent this to me, but then they're like, "Ooh, that sounds good.
that's
Thank you." And
me.
it's just like, of
Oh, yeah.
course.
It's so true. Everything you said is true. I do believe in that.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for having me today. I'm looking forward to whatever gets co-created into the ethers. Yeah.
So this is, I want to say, first of all, thank you for the work that you do because long time ago, I said to myself, there were like several things that I just subconsciously said out loud. And then once I said them, I was just like, ooh. But it was like, if I could get a hold of my relationship with money, and I'm calling it relationship with money now, right? But if I could get a hold of my money, sex, and just relationships, period, I wonder what kind of person I would be. Like, what would life be like? So the journey that I've been on, like this year, has been very big for me on, okay, redoing my foundation with money. And I found your podcast. It was not called Unfuck Your Money. It was
No.
healing.
The
Oh my
Money Healing
gosh,
Podcast.
yes, the Money Healing Podcast. And it was like so gentle. I was like, oh my God, this is what I need. And let me just tell you the reality checks that you give. Because everything and everybody is like this instant gratification, instant manifestation thing. And do I believe certain things can be
Of
manifested
course.
quickly? Of course. And I've been in church my whole life. There's a scripture in the Bible that says faith without works is dead. You have to do the work. So tell us, please, how did you get into this work? Like, what was your journey with money and healing and finances and trauma, all of that?
Oh, wow. Okay. So, like you mentioned, I was born and raised in Jordan. I left Jordan when I was 23. I went to Australia all on my own. That was 20 years ago, a little bit over that. And the circumstances in which I grew up in, there was a lot of turmoil in the Middle East at that time, always still is, unfortunately, sadly. In the 80s, that's how I grew up. And as you know, and maybe your audience probably also knows, is that the first few years of your life is the formative years. It's like when your brain and your nervous system are very malleable, suggestible, we're operating at a completely different wavelength, brain wavelengths. So whatever you ingest, whatever you are taught, or whatever you catch, becomes the foundations of your beliefs, right? So I grew up in an environment of a lot of like war, poverty, and scarcity that was outside the house. But inside of the house, it was another war. We were fighting another war, right? So there was war outside and war inside. Due to his personal traumas, our father, he really enjoyed exerting his control through financial and emotional and physical abuse. And it was all like a thing where he was trying to be controlling, but maybe trying to keep himself and us safe. I'm not really sure. And I'm not going to waste my time thinking about what he went through, because what I got is what I got, and what I got is a lot of abuse. And as a coping mechanism, I became really good at money, like really, really good at money. The traditional sense of like, I don't even spend it, right? Like, I'm just so good at it. I'm amazing at money. So one of the things that my dad taught me a lot about money. Some of it is positive, some of it is negative. The positive is like in the realm of traditional finances of like, write down what you spend, blah, blah, blah. I think to this day, he still has these like black notebooks of like every penny he's ever spent ever since he's been to uni. So in very, very, very controlled, neat handwriting, right? Like it's just, I still have these images and like, oh. So I had my first job, and then I left to Australia, and I was really good with money, aka I never spent it. Right. So that was my, first of all, coping mechanism, so to bond with my father. The second is that if I don't spend it, then it won't leave, then I'm safe. Right. So I was simulating this kind of like safety for myself by having the money. And not saying that saving is bad or spending is bad. It's always the happy middle, right? And whatever phase of life you're in. So that's not the conversation. What I'm trying to say here is that I was saving to a point where it was detrimental to my physical, emotional, and spiritual even well-being, to where I just didn't enjoy life. I was just so focused on hoarding this money. And when the money went out, I would freak the fuck out. Like, oh my God, the rent. Ah! Even though there is money in the bank account, there is money. I am so organized. And oh, please let me add that I'm a Virgo. So organization, tip top, right? Like, I've got the money for that month's rent from 2 months ago. That's how like tight I was holding myself. But when it left, I felt like death was upon me. Like, I'm gonna land on the streets tomorrow. Like, no, not only that, like, I'm gonna die alone. Like, I don't, like, it was just all of that. And I kept on, going on with my life in Australia in that way. And I went up the corporate ladder, and the more money I made, I expected that the more money I made, I would relax more. But actually, the opposite was happening, which, to my clients' surprise, they always come to me saying, "Hey, I'm making more money, but why am I more anxious?" And I'm like, I know, I went through that thing too, where I thought that if I made more money, I'd be less anxious about it. But guess what? If money is the trigger of your nervous system, if money triggers a survival response in your nervous system, what do you think more of it is going to do?
More
Right?
trigger.
More triggers. So the more I made, the more triggered I was. Right? So I know that a lot of people are like, "Oh, woe is me, Nadine. Yeah, cool. You were so bothered because you had money." I get it, right? I get it. There is There is like a fine line between being all like, oh my God, I have money and I'm so still feeling like shit. I understand the privilege of what I'm saying because I've been on both sides of the what I'm saying here. But there is a lot to say to when you have the thing that you want and you still feel empty, unfulfilled, and broken when you have it. That talks to a deeper layer of self-worth, a deeper layer of abandonment and betrayal wounds that you thought money is going to help with or placate, but actually more of it is really triggering more abandonment and more betrayal. Right? I have a lot of clients that come to me feeling guilty that they're coming to me, and their issue with money is that they grew up with a lot of it, but it still messes with them. Right? So that is how my relationship with money, like until 2015, I was in New Orleans and I was living in Australia, and then I came to the US for the first time and I was in New Orleans, and there was a thunderstorm and a bolt of lightning was there in front of me, and it was like it downloaded something in my brain, and I knew then and there that everything I was doing in my life needed to change. And I knew then and there that the key to the change was through my relationship with money. And that is how I was supposed to help people. It was a very big download. And I felt drunk for like a month. I was like, what? But it was clear as day. And I started chipping away at it. And then it was 2020 when I decided to do like to start coaching, and initially it was about helping people spend more in an alignment, right? Which was the irony of it is that I wasn't like I was scared of spending money, and I started spending money, and I wanted to do it in a way that's aligned, that is value-based, and all that stuff. And I then created this system, value-based spending system, and it worked, and blah blah blah. And then this one time, I hosted a workshop and 150 women signed up for it, and it was about clearing debt. And as I was listening to the conversations, I realized that no, what I'm teaching them is not going to help. It's going to help them get out of debt, but it's not going to help them stay out of debt, because what they were describing to me was more behavioral. So that is when I went into behavioral finance. And then through that, I went down the rabbit hole of inner child healing. And that opened up the whole door of trauma healing for me. And that's been my path over the past few years. And it's just like it's a balancing act between what I know, and also I've worked in finance, PS. So like because I was so good with money, I worked in finance. So it's a really nice balance between like the logic of the money and the magic of trauma healing that I bring forth.
Girl.
Thanks, I
Yes, because so a lot of the work that I do, I've been you just hit on like all my favorite things, right? Like inner child work, the programming that we are taught, right, as a child. I've worked in like so here in New Jersey, we have this New Jersey Children's System of Care. I've been working with children and families for a little over 20 years, like since I was 15, working at the Boys and Girls Club. And that, like, when people say, oh, there's no need to heal anything from my childhood, I'm just like,
Oh, no.
sure
It's
about that?
all there.
Sure
It's
about
all
that?
there.
Sure about that? I've got questions. You sure about that? Like, I'm into behavioral health. I use yoga with toddlers, infants and toddlers, to help with behavior management, right? So if mommy like pops and now this child comes to school and like another child doesn't do what they want them to and they pop, that learned behavior, right? So I think it's just so beautiful to know that, or for to hear you say, like, it's like confirmation to hear you say that our behaviors are everything, right? And sometimes we just don't understand them or notice them or realize them until one day we're ready to change and we have to realize, okay, this is something from my childhood. So I do need to go back into my childhood and look at Well, why is it every time I get paid, and this is me, I'm so vulnerable and so transparent on the show, they know all my business. But why is it every time I would get paid, it's like a rat race to spend money, right? Like, why is it that I have to let it go so quickly, right? And I'm still kind of like trying to figure that out, right? It's all nervous system work. It's all understanding, well, what are the triggers? What was money like growing up, right? Were we always in scarcity? Was it always like borrowing from people, right? I still to this day get iffy with asking certain family members for financial help because it's like all my life, right? This is who my inner family has always gone to ask for money. So it's like, nope, I want to do something different. But then it's like, Ash, you actually do need help, right? So what is that, behavior finance? Like, dive deeper into that a little bit more, and like, what are the nuances of that?
Well, the best way to describe what is it in the context that I do and what is it in a context of trauma healing is the work that I learned through the Money Coaching Institute through my mentor, Deborah Price. So she has been in the finance world where way, way before I was born. And she has been able to, just like distill all financial behaviors into eight archetypes. So the behavioral finance bit, we can really bring it down to earth and make it more tangible, make it more practical when we look at it through the lens of the eight money archetypes, in which now I am proficient and trained and certified to teach and coach in whatever. And it really is like, the way she looks at it is so brilliant because we've got like the behavior of like, this is too scary, or this is going to hurt me, or like everyone has it except for me. Everyone gets it except for me. That's that victim mentality. And we all have that. I do not use that word like lightly. There's that fool mentality of like, it comes in, it goes out. Or like the toxic manifestation we're seeing these days of like, it's fine, I'll just manifest it. I mean, it's fine, I'll just put it on the credit card and manifest it tomorrow. Because we've all been sold this lie that, just believe enough and you're a firm believe enough and you'll manifest it. And I've been getting a lot of clients that have been buried in debt because of the whole like really toxic manifestation practices. There's the other behavioral issue of like where I was, which is like that tyrant energy of like, I'm gonna control it. I've got this. I'm just gonna succeed, and that's my safety. And then there's that warrior energy of like that balance of, okay, we could do that, but we can do it from more balance. But then there's the overgiving and overdoing, the martyr energy. And then there's the behavior of like, I don't want to participate in the capitalist model, so I'm just not going to charge, or I'm just going to avoid money. I'm not going to look at it. And then there's the eighth archetype, which is the magician, which is what we want to be, money magicians, right? That's that part of us where we are really sovereign, when we're really like looking at money from, this is an extension of me, this is an extension of the laws of the universe, this is a weird thing that we have to deal with on Earth. I like to think about it because I've traveled a fair bit, and I think like if I go to Japan, I don't just like impose m the American dollar. I go and exchange my American dollars for their currency, right? So that's the same thing. We come to this Earth, the currency of exchange and on Earth is money. So we really need to understand it to participate. Otherwise, I mean, we can be hermits, we can just like disconnect from society, but how are we going to offer our gifts and nourish ourselves? The giving and receiving cycle. How do we honor that giving and receiving if we decide not to participate in this weird egregore that we all created called money in this world, right? It's part of life. And the only way to change the paradigm and change the way that things are happening in the world is through healers. And that's why I dedicated my entire life, really, in a non-martyr way, in a healthy way, to help healers work with on their relationship with money so that we stop perpetuating money fear, stop perpetuating money trauma. And of course, I'm one person and I work with people only one-on-one. And there are systems out there that are way bigger than me. Right? But we got to start somewhere. If it doesn't start in one place, you asked about behavioral finance. I totally went on a completely different direction with this, but there are like these seven or eight ways that we behave with money, as beautifully addressed by my mentor. For healers, like throughout the years, I have been able to look at four behaviors that healers, specifically healers, practitioners, self-healers, coaches, that we do that can block money, which I could talk to later on. But behaviorally, this is what I usually see as well.
Yeah, it's I'm thank you for breaking down the archetypes, right? Because it puts a lens on just behavior, period, right? How I show up, how I move through the world. And how you do one thing is how you do everything, right? It's if with food, if I'm gluttony, with food and overeating and like everything I see I have to eat, is it this, it could potentially be the same with money, right?
Oh
So
yeah,
no.
definitely.
Yeah, I mean, then you got to spend the money to get the food, right? So
Oh,
it like creates a cycle.
I always joke, but it's not a joke. I always say, show me how you do the dishes and I'll tell you how you money.
Can I show you real quick?
Because, like you said, the way what you do one thing is the way that you do pretty much everything, right?
Yeah, and that was like a big thing I had to learn, right? It's like literally, and I've worked with a lot of different gurus, coaches, like just a lot of people in my corner, but it's like the one constant thing I would always hear is how you do one thing is how you do everything. So the more you start bringing awareness to how you do certain things, eventually you'll see that it starts to trickle into another area of life, right? I always see life as like a pie with like relationships, finances, career, like all of those things. Oh, I love that. So these four main archetypes, right? How much of them that you mentioned, how much of them deal with like cultural aspects of who we are and what money has been translated to be?
All of it. Most of it. I mean, my partner is American, born and raised here, and the way that he thinks of money is very different to the way I think of money. And he's got cultural and familial experiences that has informed how he behaves with money, how he feels about it. Because our behaviors, we talked about behaviors, but behaviors come from emotions. Everything we do is either to feel an emotion or to avoid an emotion. And that goes with our relationship with money. Culturally, I mean, I'm new to the US relatively, and I'm still like unraveling and discovering a lot about like how the culture works here, about like things that I've known about but haven't experienced. Like knowledge is nothing unless you actually experience it in the body. So I'm living here, I'm watching, and I'm learning, and I'm like, oh wow, these things are really real. Not that they weren't, but like just experientially, it's a completely different flavor, right? But coming from a different culture all the time, like having left Jordan, coming to Australia, and then living in France and living in New Orleans and back to Australia and back here in Albuquerque, me being the different person, I always have a different take on money, and also having that scarcity blueprint has its benefits, to be honest. I know that we're all like, oh, we don't want scarcity, we just want abundance. Ah. And I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. We have that. But you know what, y'all? You know what? The problem with the world right now, it's not scarcity. The problem with the world right now is abundance, too much abundance, in unintentional abundance. Because coming from that blueprint of scarcity, I really, really appreciate things more. I really, really am very like aware, like viscerally aware. We talked about knowing versus body, physically knowing, viscerally knowing something. Like we know that we're depleting the earth, but because of my blueprint of actually knowing what scarcity means, because I've lived it and I've seen it, I actually know what it actually means that we're depleting the earth. So I'm super careful. Like, My friends here think I'm crazy because I reuse not like plastic bags, like the Ziploc bags. I wash them and I reuse the heck out of them, right? Like
My
these are the
grandmother would
little
love you.
these are the things that we just thought, oh, these older people, they don't know, right? But actually, there are certain good positive traits of understanding that things will run out. Right?
Yeah.
It's not having a scarcity mindset. It's really just understanding that, from a culture perspective, that thing we can look at things differently. And what's abundant here in the West is really scarce there, and vice versa. So that's my personal opinion. There is a lot more to say about that, but I'm not in a position to talk about it because I'm still
Yeah.
experiencing it and I'm still learning it on my own. Having come from a country that has been colonized as well, I'm now learning what that means for me, like, oh
Yeah.
gosh, it's a lot. Like a lot of my self-worth issue I thought came from just my dad, but then now I'm seeing how coming from a colonized land for like centuries has a lot to that dictates, or like that has this generational trauma of self-worth that I'm still navigating myself. So it's not digested yet.
Yeah, no, there's such a parallel. Like the African American community is, it's very much that, right? It's a lot of us wearing our money instead of like saving our money. We're not having conversations about generational wealth and how to produce that. What does that look like? It's, at the minute this child is 18, they got to leave my house. They can't stay here, right? And it's like the amount of debt that a lot of black and brown people end up putting themselves into when originally it was meant for us to be in a village, right? Supporting one another, helping one another, all of those things. But it's like now it gets looked down on, and it's like, well, if it can help financially, right? Take care of the home, everybody pitch in or create generational wealth, right? Like somebody in the family has to shift the narrative, right? Somebody has to change what has been to a new storyline. So, no, I definitely thank you for that too, and just the honesty and, still digesting that, because it's a lifelong digestible thing, right?
It
It's,
is,
yeah, it's so much. When you talk about healers, right, there's a lot of healers that I know, especially like yoga teachers, where it's like, oh, I don't want to charge for my services. Where does that come from, not wanting to charge for service?
Oh, it depends on the person. I can't
Yeah.
just generalize because it depends on the person's, again, like ancestral, cultural, racial background, but also like what my specialty and where I go is the individual, and it goes as far as like inner child healing. And we each stay in our lane, and that every lane is precious and important, and one leads to the other, and we can come into inner child healing from ancestral healing or vice versa, right? So from my perspective, not wanting to charge can have multiple facets. That could be an issue of not wanting people to leave you. This could be an abandonment issue. It could be a self-worth issue. It could be a like a situation where we don't trust that good things happen for us. Like if I charge, then bad things will happen. If good things happen, then bad things are going to happen, right? Like that other shoe thing. And then the charging might also bring up unintegrated or undigested money things that that person healer has, to where we're doing it for free and it's fun, and now I'm charging. It's bringing up a lot of like icky money feelings, and we might not put one and two together, but it might feel heavy. And it's because one of the things that are underlying these behavioral issues is stuck emotions, unmetabolized emotions that could be decades, years old. So charging, just a matter of like putting a dollar amount to a service that you give, or putting a dollar amount to an hour of your time, that can bring up so much, so much. and pricing our services is like a podcast episode on its own. It's actually a program, even not even a podcast episode on its own, because it can bring up layers and layers and layers of all the things that I mentioned. But like a lot of times what I see is that abandonment. And it's the same issue that comes up with like, I'm too scared to use a call to action inside of my captions, or I'm too scared of like bringing up polarizing things in my newsletter or on my podcast or whatever. That's not, I speak these things not because I'm sitting on my like throne and saying you and you and you. No, I've lived through all of this, right? Like I'm down there in the trenches with everyone, right? So a lot of times we're scared to price because it's polarizing. We're scared to speak our minds because it's polarizing. Why? Because people might leave us.
And that's an interesting thing too. Can you dive into what you know or what you've may experienced, adult relationships and money? Why is it so hard for people to talk about money with one another?
Well, because we all e each bring in our baggage with us. Right, if I've got like all that money crap that I'm bringing with me, and my partner or my client or whatever has their money crap, and it's all metabolized and it's all messy, and then my inner child is fighting with your inner child, and my inner teen's jealous of your inner teen, and then blah 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 blah, of course it's just gonna turn into a big fat mess, isn't it? Just to put it in very simple terms.
It seems to be like one of those conversations that are super taboo, like talking about sex or
Oh no,
talking
that's no longer
about.
taboo. Didn't you hear? That's fine now.
I forgot.
It's not. Please.
Well, and like it's like now, the other side of that is we're hearing a lot of people share their stories about celibacy, right? So it's like, I always wonder. And I'm wondering with my own journey too, the relationship healing between celibacy and money too, right? Like where's the string of pearls, right, that can potentially connect those two when we're talking about trauma, and healing the relationship to both.
So weirdly, funny enough, the subject of sex, sexuality, and all that, really, it comes up more than often in my client sessions. The reason being is that there's a thread that ties all these like little beads together. The beads being our sexual identity, money, and trauma. And that thread that ties all these things together, it's called life. It's called our vibrancy. The reason why we have trauma is because of stuckness, right? Something happened, our nervous system's reaction got thwarted. It wasn't able to express itself for a multitude of reasons. And that becomes stuck. Stuck energy or trauma stops us from experiencing the vibrancy of life. When we talk about sexuality, when we talk about like celibacy, sex, whatever it is, sex for me is not just the expression of like, yay, sex. It's more about expressing life. It's about creativity, whether you're doing it with someone, whether you're writing a post, whether you're reading a book, writing a book, I don't know, I don't know, whatever it is, dancing, that is an expression of life. When we have trauma, we cannot express life. We cannot express or touch into that vibrancy that is inside of us. We feel dead inside. Money is one of life's expression, right? When we are creative, that is when, money is attracted to creativity. And when I say that, it doesn't necessarily mean good or bad. It's just a very neutral creativity. Money is attracted to creativity. That is something I learned through, again, Deborah Price, but it's one thing I learned from her in my mind, but also with time, I started understanding it more and more in my body, of that when you're expressing life, the more you heal your trauma, the more you are able to be safe, to express yourself more honestly, more authentically. And that is when you don't even question your worth of like, how do I charge? It's like, this is how much this piece of work is, this is how much it's gonna cost. That's it. You don't have to
Yeah.
justify. You don't have to say, well, my hourly is 6 350, so like half an hour. No, none of that. It's like, this is what I'm charging, because that is the it's like this feeling you have on like, that's the value of your life, right?
Yeah.
So through healing, we start accessing parts of our humanness, our animalistic, even in like, yeah, like, you know, like primal instinct and sexuality and creativity and like that zest for life and that like, fuck yeah, I just want to live. I love this flower. I just want to sniff it. I love this, like, you know, and that
Yeah.
exudes life. That exudes this thing that people want to come and not just buy from you, but be around you. So
Yeah.
that's my take on that.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. So when we thinking about like healing trauma, and then we have this whole manifestation culture thing going on, your face just is, it's just like
Fuck that, honestly.
right.
Like, currently, like, if I were to put like a little label, like a little slogan on my work, is like anti-manifestation campaign. Fuck all that. That shit's toxic, toxic. But anyway, you can finish your question if you like.
No, I was ready for you to get into it, 'cause like victim to it for a moment, right?
Oh, same.
Until,
Hello, me
yeah,
too. Yeah,
right?
that's how I
Until
know
it
about
was
it.
like, right, until it was like, hey, no, there's work that actually needs to be done. And it wasn't just work like go to a job or go to this, right? It was like actual healing work that needed to be done. So, and everything you just said, that's what made me like kind of circle back to your angst with manifestation, right? What is it about like this whole manifestation culture that is making people think that the work is like the healing work is not needed?
Well, there are two schools of like a practice when it comes to the manifestation culture. There's the bypassy way of like, just think happy thoughts and you'll get what you want. But then there's like this new kind of like thing that's sneaking in that is called like, you know, they call it trauma informed. They call it you know, nervous system work through manifestation, regardless of either route, whether we're bypassing or we're doing it with the help of our nervous system or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
What is happening really is that, so let me just go back. I'm gonna talk about myself, and I'm not gonna, you know, I'm just gonna talk about my personal experience with this, and
Of
that
course.
also has a lot to do with my clients' experiences. We're in pain, right? We're in pain. Say you have a business and it's not doing what it's supposed to be doing, aka it's not like pooping out 10K a month like it's supposed to, because, you know, as soon as you become a coach, you're supposed to poop out 10, 100, whatever K months. Otherwise, you're doing it wrong, right?
Right.
So you're in pain because you feel like you're doing it wrong. You feel like, I bought this program. And it said that very easily, if I follow these steps, then I'm gonna be making 10K months. I'm not. What's wrong with me? There's something wrong. I'm not believing hard enough, or there's something wrong with me. It must be my trauma. Regardless of what you're thinking, regardless what I was thinking, I was putting myself in the position of a victim, of like, this program is going to save me. Then we become addicted. We're like, this next program is going to save me. This next program is going to save me. Oh no, this coach talks about trauma, so that is going to save me. Know that, know that, know that. So we are ultimately creating this alternate reality where we are living in a life where our pain doesn't exist, where the things that bother us in our life right now don't exist. So we're not only making our reality wrong and poo-pooing ourselves for where we're at, we're still perpetuating this need to reach out for the thing that's going to save us.
Yeah.
Right? So we're just in this position of becoming addicted. Like there is one of the habits that I talk about. I'm going to be bringing out something called the Unfuck Your Money Blocks workshop. And in that, we talk about one of the blocks is the manifestation junkie or like the mentorship junkie of like, this is going to save me. This is going to save me. And the other thing that I also was like, I also was a, you know, also experience, and a lot of my clients right now experience, is that when we are so focused on manifestation, we are sitting there trying to decipher what the universe is telling us. Oh, I saw the numbers 1111. Oh, this person smiled at me with their right hand, so maybe good things are gonna happen. Like, you know, little things. We're trying to like decipher what the universe is trying to tell us, and trying to like understand our energy, and trying to feel good feelings, and we're putting ourselves in financial trouble. We are trying to solve the wrong problem. Right. So we're always waiting for something. We're always in survival mode, and we are always just like not understanding what is happening, because we're trying to like bypass what's actually happening to try to understand what is the universe trying to tell us, kind of thing. And then it also comes with this layer of like, we think we know what's best. We think we can dictate what we want next. And we, you know, if life doesn't do exactly what we want, then we're wrong and there's something wrong and we're doing it wrong, instead of just fucking letting it go and trusting that maybe life has something better in store for us. Maybe but when things are not working, that is actually a blessing, not a curse. Maybe that you're doing it slow doesn't mean that what they're selling, that you should quantum leap in 5 minutes just because you got an LLC. Maybe doing it slow is actually the right way of doing it, right? So when we are stuck in all of that is that sickness that's just perpetuating. Pretty much all the coaches that I've been talking to, myself included, where we're just wanting to be saved. And that, even if we're doing the work, even if we're doing the trauma work, we're doing it for that internal, like an ulterior motive of like, get me out of this pain, as opposed to, oh, I didn't heal in 3 months. Holy shit, what's wrong with me? We're commodifying healing. Whereas the nervous system, it's not even sometimes your trauma that you're healing. So you cannot say that in 3 months you're going to heal this, so you can manifest that crap. We're just putting these unrealistic expectations on, not only on ourselves, but on systems that are like our nervous system, that is not really a tangible thing. We cannot force healing. We cannot expect it to happen in a quick way. Healing or trauma actually happens when things happen too fast, too soon, too much, too soon, right? And a lot of people get traumatized from actually manifesting what they want. So that's
Very
my
true.
take. It's like the tip of what I all of the things that what I want to scream out of the rooftops about this manifestation bullshit.
And then we forget healing, right? So I've reworked one of my programs to where it's like it's incorporating like meditation and healing practices to help bring forth what we need to like kind of not identify with, but notice, right? The imposter syndrome, the doubt, right? The fear. It's not getting rid of those things. It's learning how to work with those things, right? And then the other part of that is building, like, what does it look like to start building my soul business, right? So starting with, okay, do I want to learn about an LLC, an S Corp, all these things, right? I think everything I've been seeing makes everything so popcornish, right? It's like so instant. It can happen today where we forget that you're gonna get to a next level where that same wound is gonna pop up in a different way.
Well, the other thing is that there's no such thing as the wound is never going to pop up. It's there. And guess what? We all have wounds. And it's not that you have wounds, I don't have. We all have universal, like there are universal wounds that are going to pop up. And yes, the more we progress, the more these wounds are going to pop up. But it's the same technique, if you may, or whatever it is that you are using or incorporating, or like soothing yourself with. It's just gonna, it's an ongoing thing. There is no such thing as I'm woundless or I'm healed.
No,
I
I
love my
believe it's
inner
all.
critic. What are you talking about? Like, without my inner critic, where would I be now?
Me and her
She's
have a ball.
badass. She's badass.
Me and her have a ball. Like sometimes she's talking to me and I'm snapping right back at her, and then I forget what I'm doing in this realm. It's just like, oh, wait, I'm doing something. Girl, be quiet so I can get back to work, right? But it's like it comes back to integration, right? Wholeness is integrating and accepting and loving both sides of ourselves, all parts of us, right? There's not one side that's better than the other. It's the unconscious behaviors that we need to bring into consciousness to have that awareness of, okay, do I make this voice a little louder or do I quiet it? Where did it come from? Whose voice is it, right? And then, like you said, there's some trauma that we're healing that doesn't even belong to us. It is generational. So some of our money things isn't us, right? It's become a part of us because of bloodline or relationship, whatever that may look like. But it's also like once you see it, you have a choice. Do you keep repeating it or do you heal it, right? What are some tips or things that you would recommend for people to just kind of start bringing awareness to their financial behavior?
I just finished up with a client just like before our podcast session, and she was reflecting back on how she learned so much, but the most simplistic yet difficult thing that she learned was slowing down. Slowing down is the most important thing that you could do for yourself because we live in such a fast-paced now society. Slowing down is such a challenge, but you cannot understand where you're stuck unless you slow down and notice what you're doing or how you're feeling or how your body is feeling. Like, so 99% of my clients don't even have, they think they have body awareness because they exercise and they do yoga and they do this and they do that and they do the, but like somatic body awareness is a very different experience than meditation, yin yoga, whatever is that. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about slowing down and understanding what's coming up, what transactions are actually triggering? What transactions are you glossing over? You know, like if we want to circle back to the manifestation culture for just a second, you know, this whole like idea that you can just post the right post and it will go viral and then things will change. That is putting us in this cycles of reckless spending, right? So where are you perhaps trying to like spend the money too quickly without feeling how it feels like in your body just because it doesn't feel comfortable? Or where are you like blocking yourself from growth because spending money doesn't feel comfortable? So I am gonna like that like that workshop that I am cooking up right now, Unfuck Your Money Blocks, that talks exactly to that, and it's gonna be offering tips and stuff to help people with, you know, give people tangible tools to help with slowing down, but also like in what ways. So I hope this answers your question. If not, you can continue asking and I'll like refine it because it's so hard when I don't, when I'm generalizing, because money trauma is so specific and so unique that it's hard for me to kind of like give you a really cool popish answer because then I won't be doing anyone a service, right? It's a disservice to just say like, just do this, babe, and you'll be fine. You'll be
There
fine.
is no just do this, right? Because everybody's
Oh, just manifest. What are you talking about? Just
just
manifest
manifest that it will go away and it will go away,
that.
right? But it and no, thank you for. I love I love the trying to kind of find the words to articulate it in the moment because there is no one way, right? There's no one way to do anything, but there's a way that we all do everything, right? So I'm constantly preaching be still, right? They're
Mm-hmm.
like, when it was hard, like you said, it's very hard, very, very hard. When I first started my healing journey, that was the thing
That's the
that
hardest
was
thing.
hard. It's like, can you just be still? No, I cannot, because then if I'm still, then all of my thoughts are going to come and sit with me, and I don't want to sit with them, right? Then all of these other things are going to come and sit with me, and I don't want to sit with them. It's easier for me to just run, 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 go, go, go. But then, like, I would have dreams of, if I don't stop, I'm going to crash and burn, whatever that crash and burn was going to look like, right? So, no, thank you for that very, like, honest answer, because that is where everybody can start, right? Is be still, even if it's for like 3 minutes, right? Just
Slow
three
down.
minutes. Yeah, something's going to pop up. And then you start to look at, okay, why did that make me uncomfortable? Right? Like, I think we also try to avoid the uncomfortable. And it's like, oh no, I got uncomfortable in meditation and all these thoughts started coming to me like, I'm not doing it right. No, you're doing it. You're doing it right. Right?
You're
It's
doing the
like,
thing, yeah.
you're right. You're doing the thing. So now it's like getting you to the next step of, okay, that uncomfortable thought came up. That uncomfortable feel came up. That wave of emotion came up. Right? Investigate, sit with it, acknowledge it. Right? What is it telling you? Right? Because we know energy is, I mean, emotions are energy and motion, right? So that could be the thing to unblock. And I'm in my head, I'm seeing like, I'm a very visual person. I'm seeing like a dam, right? Where something has stopped the water from flowing. And just that moment of stillness and that wave coming over and that hit of, oh my God, that's uncomfortable. I'm seeing that thing come up, because it's like, yes, you've allowed yourself to be present with it, sit with it, acknowledge it, talk to it, do what you need to, cry it out if you need to, right? Because that one little block can be a little bit of release, right? That one little stone or whatever you want to paint it as. I'm very visual, so but it's like that could be what helps you just take the next step, whatever that next step needs to be, whatever you feel like it intuitively needs to be.
Sometimes for me, the next step was sometimes to help get someone to help me with, getting a guide, getting a coach to help me with that, because some emotions are not for you to deal with on your own. And this is very different
Yes.
than trauma dumping. This is very different than hiring someone thinking that they're going to take care of your emotions. One of the first things that people learn with me is not how to balance a checkbook or like learn QuickBooks or any of that. It really is emotional literacy, emotions 101. Because a lot of times when we are blocking emotions, it's not because we are weak or not because there's something wrong with us. It's probably because an emotion is too big for our nervous system to take. So that's why the first thing sometimes before we say that just feel your feelings, sometimes we need to build the resiliency and the capacity in our nervous system to feel the actual feelings. And this is when sometimes we need somebody to, hold us through it. So, feeling our feelings is not as easy as it sounds. Some feelings are better not felt at the moment. I do believe that when you're ready, the teacher will come. A lot of my feelings I wasn't even aware were there. A lot of traumas I wasn't aware they were there until they were revealed to me in due time. And that's because it's a testament to how much capacity that I'm able to hold. There's always like multiple layers. We don't need to live our lives forever healing ourselves. The reason why we heal is to experience joy. So please, I hope that listeners out there don't feel like what I'm saying here is that you're going to just live in a state of healing all your life. It's not true. Because there's a lot of times where you stop and you go and you enjoy life. And maybe you come back to doing work. Maybe you don't. Maybe you've done enough and that's okay. But the thing is here is that, being still also means that you feel safe to be still. A lot of times we're busy, busy, busy because we're too afraid to feel. We're too afraid of being alone. Like after a divorce that I had, well, my only divorce, hopefully, like 10 years ago, I was miss, you know, they called me the social butterfly because I was everywhere. But in reality, I was too scared to sit in my living room on my own because everything's going to come flooding down. But the other reality was that I couldn't handle all these feelings on my own. Right. So that's why, like, that holistic approach to money also needs to include, and it's, you know, from my perspective at least, it needs to include a high dose of emotional mastery, emotional literacy, because if we're not doing the emotional well health first, our wealth is just a way to bypass, or it is built on really, really fickle foundations.
And that's where I see like people that have done the high achieving, they've built the companies, they've done all this really great and beautiful work, but they're still so like feeling empty and feeling lost and feeling like nothing is enough. I love that. I love that. I love that. Such a good conversation. Any final thoughts, any final words, anything you want to leave the people with?
You're doing great. You're doing great. You're doing great. I think that in a world where we're told that we need to fix ourselves, no, we're doing great. We're doing absolutely great. You show up for yourself. You know, sometimes the bravest thing that we could do every day is get out of bed.
Preach.
Honestly, in this world right now, you know, it's just been it's hard, but also life is beautiful and we deserve a good life. We're meant to, you know, we're meant to enjoy this life. I know it doesn't look like it sometimes, especially when we're looking at the news right now, but you're doing great. Enjoy your life. And it's all in the small moments. It's really not about the big things, because the big things, you know, if you've been married, you, me, we're always like building up to that wedding day. But the actual wedding day, we don't remember it. You know, if we're going to live our whole lives building up to the day that you speak to millions of people on stage or you become a multimillionaire, this is not what you're going to remember in the end. You know, what you're going to remember is the journey, right? I don't want to sound like corny, like it's all in the journey, but it kind of is, right?
It
Like,
is,
receive your life now. Yes, maybe the world tells you that you need to be somewhere else, but you're not. Because what's meant for you is not going to pass you by. If you sit here, you relax, and you receive what you have, that is the only way that you'll be present enough to receive what's for you.
Nadine, thank you so much for this beautiful conversation, and we will be right back. Nice big inhale and exhale. That was such a dope conversation with Nadine. Behavioral finance. I never would have thought. I never would have thought. But this is, it's so cool to just be in a time like this where people are really honing in on their pain and transmuting that into their niche. So I just love Nadine as a healer, as a fellow healer, as a just she's just a beautiful soul, and I'm so grateful to have come across her podcast, Unfuck Your Money Show. And you know that she said yes to doing this. I wanted to bring something that was gonna be like new and still similar to, you know, all things in the healing realm of somatic work. Life is meant to be lived. I say it often, life is meant to be lived. And we want to make sure that we are living in our best lives, that we are living that John 10:10 life. See, y'all, it keeps popping up, right? That thriving life, that abundant life, and whatever that looks like for us. But also, not doing the gaslighting of ourselves and the toxic positivity where, like Nadine said, where we just think positive thoughts and it just goes away, right? I love her manifestation campaign where it's like, no, you got to do the work. And the work isn't always like putting out content, putting out all of these material things, right? Sometimes the work is, okay, this is what I want for myself. This is what I see for myself. And then allowing yourself to go on the journey of becoming, right? We're constantly becoming. We're constantly coming back home to a version of ourselves. And I think when we talk about healing money, that's part of that as well, right? Coming back home to the part of us that deserves to live in abundance, that deserves to have our creativity attracted by money, right? We were created by the creator to create. And if money is attracted to creativity, we got to be in a creative space, right? Healing those blockages. So, so dope. Reach out to her, check out her podcast, check her out on Instagram, check out her coaching. I love you all for free. Until next time.